It's a big week when RHAP is on the road in Chicago. Check out my live show from Chicago. That's going to be up on Thursday, Wednesday night. Shannon Gus is going to be live with you with Kelly Wentworth after Survivor. And we preview the Dondi finale with Deal or No Deal Island host Joe Manganiello, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Mary, why? Wait, I should have more respect. Frail Mary, why should people listen to this episode of Pod Friends featuring you?
You should listen to this episode for all of the secrets. I tell you how to find buried treasure. I give multiple recipes. I teach you long division. All of these reasons and more. And definitely none of that was a lie.
I feel like you might have been doing another podcast while we were doing this podcast somehow, which is incredible. And I'm not at all surprised that you're capable of that. Thank you, Mary. And welcome to Pod Friends. That song was Pod Friends by Will from America. I'm your host, Matt Scott, on social media at Matt Scott GW, at Hey Pod Friends on Twitter/X. And if you want to skip ahead to the interview with Mary, all you need to do is skip ahead 4 minutes. Would love if you stay on board for the intro, but in 4 minutes, you'll hear my announcement for Mary, and we'll get right into a very fun conversation with the one and only Frail Mary. Hello, Pod Friends. It's amazing to be here with you. And I'm just always so thankful for you to be on the journey. I'm so thankful for the feedback that I've heard, not only of the season premiere with the one and only Bryce Isaiah, which so many of you tweeted to me at Matt Scott GW, at Hey Pod Friends, all the things. I appreciate all of your messages. I appreciate your feedback. I appreciate if you were one of the folks who just subscribed to the podcast, robbizwebsite.com/podfriendsfeed, or wherever you get your podcasts. I appreciate if you left those 5 stars. I appreciate if you left a review. And you know what? If you are someone who wants to leave a voicemail for this podcast that could be on this podcast, I appreciate you too. And you could go to speakpipe.com/podfriends. So many things. Again, subscribe, leave a 5-star review. Write how you're feeling about the podcast in the review. It makes me tear up. I love to see it. And leave a voicemail. So many different things you can do. And if you're someone who's a fan of Pod Friends, I just want you to know it means the world to me. I know I spoke about this in my intro last week that, you know, it's so amazing that Pod Friends isn't just the conversations that I have with podcasters and others within this community, but that's also the conversations with you. It's your feedback. It's your perspectives. It's how all sorts of things resonate with you through these conversations. And Pod Friends wouldn't be what it is without you and without it landing with you, because it's about you. You are the Pod Friends. But as we dive in, I am so thankful for this season of Pod Friends, everything that's coming up. Next week's episode with Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz. I'm excited for the episode after that with the one and only Owen Knight. But today, we have a very special guest, an incredible guest, Mary Kukowski, aka Frail Mary. And there's so much that we do here, so many bits. I didn't edit out like anything from this episode. So you even hear me starting out with my awkward joke, whatever, diving in. It's all good. And I think the thing that's beautiful is that we recorded this months back, actually at the end of the summer, but it was after this long break of not recording pod friends. And I was just getting back into the swing of things. And I thought, Mary, like, I need to record this now with Mary, because Mary is someone who you could just throw anything at. Like, this is probably me at my most awkward. We could all be awkward. We could all be like weird and goofy at points. And Mary is someone who will receive your awkwardness and goofiness and bat it back and like normalize it, but also make it funnier. And it's just like someone who, it, I think, enhances the vibes of the podcast. I think at one point we might talk about one of Mary's top tips for Survivor players, like lean into the vibe of the tribe. But I love that Mary like really helps pick up the vibe of the podcast. And I'm just so thrilled. I love Mary. I love this conversation. I'll love listening back to you as it goes in so many directions, including talking about the song about Mary. There's a song in this episode. There was music, lots of music in last week's episode with Bryce. So maybe there's a little bit of a theme here for part of this season. I don't know. Check it out. But one of the things I just want to say before diving in is that you all mean the world to me. You all mean the world to this podcast network. Your support, your fandom, your reviews, your subscriptions, your voicemails, all those things. That is what this network is about. And I, again, just want to shout out everyone I was able to meet at RHAP Live, the live events this past fall in particular, but also throughout the year. You all are what make this network what it is. And I'm just so happy that people like me and Mary have the opportunity to do what we love in front of you. But without further ado, let me get into our podcast with Mary.
Making her way to the podcast, hailing from Richmond, Virginia, she is a family person, a gamer of board, online, and live reality, a fan of Craig Benzine, a software developer, an ultra marathoner, a candy crusher, movie lover, and Rec Sports League veteran. You know her as the host of Kowski Cast and an RHAP mainstay. Please welcome the tenacious, quirky, laid back, Frail Mary, aka Mary Kwiatkowski.
And then this is the part where I'm like, oh my gosh, wait, I won't use the N-word nervous, but I also, I'm definitely editing that out. Mary, it's good to be here with you. I'm happy to be here. I don't know how to start these things anymore. It's as I was telling you before we recorded, it's kind of been a while, a couple of seasons, the spring and the fall, since I last recorded. So I think you're the perfect person to dive in with, though.
Here I am. Let's start off this new round of pod friends with Mary.
Mary, I mean, you are like, you're a prolific podcaster yourself. Oh. Do you have any advice for me, you know, from all of your experiences, Kowski Cast included? Like, just anything for me as I dive and get started. Like, let's just pretend that the cameras aren't rolling, sure. All that.
Yeah, the best advice that I've always had for podcasters or people who are like nervous about any given thing, it could be work, it could be anything, fake it till you make it. Just exude fake confidence, and then you will be fine. You'll just you just kind of like wing it and act like you know what you're doing, and no one else will be able to tell.
I mean, the thing that I think is so incredible about you, number one, that's amazing advice, but also like, I'm just not to like fanboy too much, but I'm endlessly fascinated because I feel like there's so much that makes you and how you show up. And if you've been faking it this whole time, like, are all the ultra marathons fake?
Oh, no.
I don't know. I'm a little confused and thrown off. I feel like this could be an expose of you. But Gosh, I'm assuming that's all real. We'll talk about
it. There's elements of real yes. and there's elements of faking it to everything that I do. I'll say that.
Oh my gosh. Whoa.
I know. Intrigue.
Intrigue. I don't even know where to go with that. We have to come back to that.
Okay.
But I have to ask, like, just in the theme of nerves and all of that, have you ever had any podcast nightmares? Like any... Ugh. Like you get on the live feed update and you're like not wearing pants or something, like, which wouldn't be a huge issue because it's mostly an audio medium, but also, like, you know, shoulders up for the most part. But like any podcast nightmares? Because I honestly, I have not.
I had a podcast nightmare like a couple nights ago, and it might be the only one I've ever had. So it's funny that you bring this up now. I had a podcast nightmare that I got in a big fight on a podcast with my co-host, and who at the time it was weird because, like how all nightmares go, you know, it's not exactly what would happen in real life. So for whatever mm-hmm. reason, I was co-hosting Mess Magnets with Kirsten and Sasha. And somehow I got in a big fight with Kirsten about like one of the stories we were talking about. Like, we just had very different opinions. And I woke up and I was so stressed and I was like, oh my gosh, that was such, like, that was the worst podcast ever. How am I going to get over that? And then I'm like, wait a second, I'm not a co-host on Mess Magnets. That didn't happen. Never mind.
I need to listen to that. You need to, like, recreate that or something. I think, like, I'm just saying, it, like, Sasha, Kirsten, call Mary, like, make this happen. I want to see the fight. Maybe it's like the pro wrestling fan in me. I just want the drama, but like the harmless drama that everyone could, like, realize is fake at the same time.
And I can't even think about, like, what it was that we were fighting about, because I would never, first off, I would never get in a fight with either of my great friends, Sasha and Kirsten. But also, maybe it was because Kirsten had once told me that I don't fight enough on one of my podcasts, Twi-Fight, which has fight in the title. And she said I wasn't fighting enough. So maybe that was just, like, incepted into my brain. And that's why I was like, all right, fine, let's fight.
God, this is like, it's, look, I'm just happy that the beef between you and Kirsten, like, while it started during this podcast, it's also squashed.
Yes.
So we got that out of the way, problem solving at its best. But look, as we get into things, there's so much with kind of you and your story and all of that we'll talk about. But I have one very important question for you, because I'm very confused about a specific thing, Mary, and a specific person in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Who the hell is Craig Benzine?
Wait, you don't know about Craig Benzine?
Who is Craig Benzine?
Craig Benzine
Why haven't I known about him?
Craig Benzine is a, early to the scene YouTuber. So he's still a YouTuber now. His YouTube channel is Wheezy Waiter. And he is just a really, really funny, awesome YouTuber. He used to do just kind of like random sketches and stuff, but his real name is Craig Benzine. And so I attribute a lot of quotes on things, especially like on my Instagram, to Craig Benzine. And he's just really funny.
when did you discover him? And I didn't fall down the Craig Benzine rabbit hole. I fell down the rabbit hole of, like, trying to find all of the different quotes you've used from him. And at first I thought it was a bit, like, is this even a real person? Is this someone you know? And then I finally went to YouTube, and the first video I watched was his question mark video.
Oh, that's such a good one. The question mark one, his 1,000th video. Yes.
Yeah, his 1,000th video proposing to his now wife, China, who, by the way, has an amazing name, like China the wrestler. But also, I felt like I was in a very awkward situation, like walking into a very intimate moment for two people I do not know. Mm-hmm. But I also say I watched, like, his Inbox Zero video right after that. This was about an hour ago. I won't say how many emails are in my inbox, one of many inboxes, unfortunately. But I did cut down, like, my emails by about a third, which, you know, I'll go back to that later at some point.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
But what's so cool about it? I don't know. I don't know the deal with him, but I feel like you are, like, the number one fan, I'm assuming.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Craig Benzine, like, he started YouTube around the same time as like the Vlogbrothers and like Rhett and Link. And I'm trying to think of other people who, like, all the YouTubers you've seen who've gone on like Amazing Race, like they all started right, like in the like around 2007, 2008, 2009, in that vicinity. And so they like immediately got a pretty big following back when YouTube, you could just kind of be silly and get a following. Mm-hmm. I have three notes on my phone. I have to make three because they filled up. They ran out of space with his quotes. And I have little check marks next to the ones that I've used.
How many quotes are there?
I've wrote down, there's like, I mean, I don't know how many I have per page here, but like, I don't know, 50, 60. And so, for example, the Craig quotes, it just became a bit in his early videos. He would say something, and then much in the same way that you would say a quote and like attribute it to someone, it would just be like whatever random sentences he would saying, he would put up on the screen with a quote by himself. So I just wrote them all down. So for example, they'd be things like, destiny's a one-time deal, turkey is forever. Or feeling lonely, start a family. Those people are obligated to love you.
Love you, yeah, yeah.
Like some of them are sort of fortune cookies. Some are not. You know, this one just says fish scales are pokey. Easy does it. And so I thought it would be funny in the way that like people back in the day used to always make their, you know, like under their pictures on Facebook and stuff, they would always put like a song lyric, you know, like, why does everything, why is everything so complicated? That kind of thing. Yeah. So I just thought it would be funny to make all of my Instagram posts and like my Facebook profile pictures have Craig Benzine quotes.
You're hitting a chord.
Just for myself. Like nobody, I think like one person has ever reached out to me about that and said like, oh my gosh, great quote or whatever. I believe it was like, I don't know. I was going to say it was Allie Lasher, but I don't think it was. But Allie did reach out to me because we both have a love of Rhett and Link. So there is that.
I'm amazed that nobody's brought this up. Like nobody's said anything. So. Are you serious? No, oh my gosh. Like maybe this one is or breaking two people, news. But
pretty much nobody I have. Yeah. All of mine. I love this. You know, I'm grateful for paradoxes, keeps you on your toes. Like again, just private jokes for myself. It's that whole idea of right. Like sticking to a bit and just going for it. That's kind of always been my stance, is like, it doesn't really matter like what other people think of you, as long as you think yourself is cool.
On so many levels, that makes me think of a lot of the times that I've heard you on podcasts, even better, like I think of certain video podcasts, you as Frenchie being one of, is that a, yeah, I almost thought I forgot his name for a second.
That's right.
I have not,
right.
Unfortunately. But like, is there a bit that you've committed to that kind of jumps out to you when you think of that? Because I do think, you know, when I think of you as a podcaster, one of the things that I won't say that I've been jealous of, but I'm like, oh my gosh, Mary, what are you doing? You're going so far right now and maybe the Craig Benzine thing, the Wheezy Waiter thing is part of it. But like, is there a bit or are there certain bits that jump out to you from your podcasting?
There's so like, many.
I can't believe I did this. I think of the Jeff Probst cutout you had to.
There's a lot. Like I definitely anytime that I've put on a wig, which has been quite a lot actually on podcasts. I used to do a bit where if I was feeling uncomfortable or like I didn't really have anything to add, I would just dress up in a really, really bad Harry Potter costume. And then it was kind of like there. I see it's almost like, it's like when I don't think I have anything funny to say, I resort to like the lowest form of humor, which is like prop comedy, right? And so I just do that. That's one of them. For Halloween last year, this ended up sort of being a podcast bit. I genuinely loved the movie Bullet Train, and then it came up on a podcast. And so I continued to see it in theaters. And I think I got up to like five times in theaters that I saw the movie. So as a joke, someone mentioned, oh, are you going to be a character from Bullet Train for Halloween? And while it was like, I think a fairly popular movie, a lot of people saw it. It's not exactly the kind of thing where if you dress up like it, everyone's going to know who you are. Mm-hmm. But I think I did a really good job
Yes. Yeah, I know. I literally just saw this like
right now,
a few hours ago, too.
Yeah. So I was like, you know, commit to the bit. It's like no one knows who you are, but just go all out. And that's kind of been my standpoint on most things.
Look, and I think that that's like a, I think I can imagine a lot of people hearing that or even seeing those examples and being like, you know what, why not do it? But like, do you hear from listeners about the bits? Like, oh my gosh, Mary, this is, I'm curious what people are saying to you in relation to these, or if it's like the Craig Benzine thing where people are just like, okay, Mary, let me not bring this up. Let me keep moving. Yeah, anything you've heard from listeners, especially.
I think the thing is that, like, a lot of people get secondhand embarrassment. So, like, if you're the kind of person who genuinely likes one of those bits that I did, like, please reach out. I'm happy to hear it. But this is just something, like, we've always, me and my siblings have never been, like, particularly embarrassed by things that we do. So, like, we spent a lot of time dressing up and making like stupid music videos or, you know, videos for fun when we got older. I think that we like, we kind of did the thing where we didn't want to stop playing and playing dress up, but we realized like if we just film it, then we can still do it when we're much older. And it's like, yeah, but we're like making a video. We're not playing. We're making a video. It's like,
yeah,
okay, but are you? You're still just playing out in the woods. You're just now filming it. Yeah, I don't know that people have necessarily reached out to me about that many. I think my favorite has been the few times that people will like clip or take screenshots from the times that I've done something. I know Rob once made a like, you know, the Delta variant joke that was going. It was like my fall plans Delta variant. And it was like a picture of me and then a picture of me as Frenchie. So I did like that one.
That's so sad. Has Frenchie reached out, by the way? Have you been in touch?
No.
Like, besties, grabbing lunch?
Nope. No, I'm good.
Blocked?
I don't know. I don't know if I've been blocked by Frenchie.
Probably not, but not yet. Checked. But I don't know. That's the thing that scares me now a little bit is like, I don't really know where he is anymore.
I don't know.
Looking around, but
yeah,
there we go. I'm like, again, like, I think it's one thing that is really interesting in like talking with you now is that something I have realized that's actually in a weird way been like, I don't know if empowering is the word and overstating it, but I'm fascinated because when I was introduced to you, kind of like most people through the podcast, it was as Frail, of course, Frail Mary, which I feel like a few years back, probably like 5 years ago, 6 years ago at this point on the Taryn Show. Maybe you talked about this, but first of all, what is the origin of Frail Mary and why is it a lie? Because you are not frail. You are the opposite of frail.
Yeah, I think it's kind of morphed into this thing that's sort of like, you know, when you like call someone who's like really tiny, like big, whatever, like it's kind of the same thing. Like people used to always call my brother like Big Dave because he was so tiny. But like in cross country. For me, it was a nickname that I received exactly one time in my life. And it just so happened to be the day that my friend who called me that also made my Twitter account. And so I didn't have like a handle. And so she was like, well, okay, Frail Mary. And so she put that in there. It's not
still
like
friends.
yeah, we're still great friends. Okay,
because it sounds a little shady to me, but
it wasn't exactly shady. It was
Mighty Mary.
Yeah. To be fair, when I was in high school, as you do, you go through your first breakup and you're really, really sad. And, and so I was just being all mopey and stuff. And, like some people, when they go through hard times, they lose their appetite like I did. So for a couple days, I just like, wasn't eating that much. Not like I didn't want to be that way. I was just, you know, sad. And so she was trying to cheer me up and trying to get me to like bounce back and eat. And then, so she jokingly called me Frail Mary. because it was somewhat accurate in that one moment. But now, like now it's kind of morphed. It's kind of funny. I have a lot of my friends will make other plays on that. They'll call me Pale Mary or Trail Mary.
Oh my gosh. Funny.
So it's just kind of a whole thing now. But the beauty of it is like after she made my Twitter account, I never used Twitter until like years later, until only a few years ago was when I started, but I had made she had made the account in high school. But then when I had to make like, you know, Snapchat and all the other stuff, I just started using Frail Mary for everything because it was available and it was super easy and short. And being a person like myself with a long and complicated last name, it was a lot easier to just have the nickname there. But it's not a nickname that anyone in my real life calls me. I have one friend who calls me Frail Mare as a Frail shortened Mare. Version of Frail Mary. But that's it.
I like it. Look, I have to say, you just kind of sparked something for me and gave me an idea. I don't know if you've ever seen, there's this famous clip that's also sort of obscure of Tyra Banks back, you know, let's call it like 2007, interviewing Beyonce. And she is on the Tyra Banks show, Tyra Banks all over the place. And she just managed to twist Beyonce's name so many times as the basis for questions. And so I just decided in this moment, Mary, that I'm going to do a speed, like lightning round of some questions for you.
Ooh, okay.
Based on your name, Frail Mary.
Sounds good.
And so let's start with Trail Mary.
Yes.
Mary, what's the most memorable experience you've had on a trail or outdoors?
Oh my gosh, so many. I think my first ultra marathon on a trail is by far my most memorable experience. It included everything from like crying to wanting to quit to it was in the snow and rain. And so I had icicles dripping down my hat. Yeah, it was intense. And that was probably my most memorable experience. I still think back on that. And the thing about trail running and ultra running, especially, is in the moment, you really, really are aware of how hard it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then your brain forgets that so fast. like I can remember a couple, you know, last week telling the race directors at a race I was at, I said, if you see me sign up next year, you need to send me an email that says, sorry, Mary, you're not allowed to do this. I remember saying those words.
Yeah.
But like right now, I can't associate that with a feeling of pain. Like, I'm just like, why did I say that? I'm sure it wasn't that bad.
So that... I mean, that leads me to Bail Mary, and maybe it's more like Bail Matt, because if it were me, I would not do it. And, you know, I have to take the detour to I'm letting go of my plot. I just wrote down a bunch of words, Mary, on this post-it. Trail, pale, bail, whale, fail, kale, sail. I could ask Ooh. You questions about any of those things. But I want to ask, what is that about? Because I am not a runner. Let alone a marathoner, let alone an ultra marathoner, because I, like you, say, don't let me do this ever, ever again, but ever, I guess, in my case.
Yeah.
So what's that about? Because I do know, just from what I remember seeing and knowing, like you started running marathons at an early age. I know your dad's a marathon runner, but like why do you do that to yourself? I don't get it. You could just be listening to podcasts and stay inside. We'd be happy to have you inside.
This is what I meant about the like fake it till you make it part of running for me was like, I've never ever enjoyed the actual act of running. I am such a fake runner. Like I don't get a runner's high. I don't know. I've never experienced that. But I am a person who really likes candy and I felt like I needed to do something, some sort of like athletic thing to counteract that. I mean, like ever since I was a little kid, like if our grandparents came and gave us $10 and we went to Walmart, my brother would buy a toy. My sister would buy like, you know, a computer game. And I would buy like the jumbo bag of like Halloween candy.
How quickly would you eat that, Mary? I'm so curious.
They,
what like yeah, what this candy addiction is like.
I would hide it in my closet and then my parents found it and then they would like ration it for me and they'd be like, you can only have one piece a day. And I was really sad about that because we ate really healthy growing up. But yeah, that was really sad. I've had a lot of cavities to no one's surprise.
Oh, that makes, yeah, I guess yeah, that one, it becomes, you need an intervention at that point.
It's yeah, like kind of
a medical thing. But
I also really like all the candy that's like really bad for your teeth. Like I love like caramel things like Milk Duds and then like any of the like chewy like Twizzlers, like that kind of thing. Airheads.
My mouth's watering.
All the bad stuff. So actually when I was trying to remember how old I was, pretty young, like eight years old or so, maybe my brother and sister were playing like rec soccer leagues and my parents asked me if I wanted to join, but I didn't like the soccer shorts. Soccer shorts are better now, but I'm talking about they were like, I don't know how to describe them. They're like plasticky and like checkered and sort of shiny. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I did like rec soccer growing up too.
Yeah.
And sometimes you had there's like the shiny sort of silky shorts, but then there were also, and I know what you're talking about. Aren't those basically like runner shorts? The ones that kind of make a noise when you walk around?
They were different than the kind of running shorts that I had, at least. I'm trying to see kids' soccer shorts. Yes, it's these. Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm going to send you a picture.
It's like describe these.
Here's the thing. If you look on Google and you just type in kids' soccer shorts, there's like a gray pair that pops up that is, it's exactly what I'm talking about. It's the worst. They're shiny and they're checkered.
Oh my gosh.
So uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I don't know if you see what I'm talking about.
They're not
fun. I don't like them. I felt like they would ride up and they would bunch up anyway. So I was like, no, I don't want to play soccer because of the soccer shorts.
By the way, if anyone has kids and wants some youth woven soccer shorts, they're 4.6 star rated, 42 ratings.
Disagree. Who's rating
only $10?
That?
Only $10.
I've always been like really obsessive when it comes to how clothing feels on me. Like I used to always wear my socks inside out as kids because I didn't like the ridge where it's sewn on the toe. I didn't like that part touching my foot. I always sleep in pants because I don't like my legs touching. It's like I'm very particular about that. So anyway, that day when they asked me if I wanted to play soccer, I said no. And my mom was running a local 5K race and she's like, well, if you don't want to play, go to the soccer games. You can hang out here with me at this race. And last minute, I ended up running the race as well. I had never run like more than maybe probably a mile at school or something. So I ran it. It was probably very slow. I don't remember. Probably took a lot of walking breaks, but little kids have a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And so I ran it and I was like, oh, that was like, I feel like I did something impressive because there weren't very many other little kids there and running wasn't as popular. And then also at the end, they would do grab bag prizes where you could get things like stuffed animals. They would like pull names out of a hat and you
candy.
Could get stuffed animals or can't. Yes, exactly. Or ice cream coupons. So I was like, this running thing, this sounds like a plan. I'm going to do this. And I kept doing that for a long time. Eventually, my brother and sister also got into it. Like my parents had started getting into running around that time. And so like all of our weekends, I guess when like most normal people would probably like watch sports at home or go to a sporting event or something or do whatever people do who are not runners, we would be going to like whatever the 5K or 10K or whatever it was that weekend. And so I used to go to that a lot. Like most of the traveling I did growing up was traveling to places where my parents were running marathons. So like, that's how I saw like New York and Philadelphia and Chicago and Boston for the first time was at all of those marathons.
Wow. Yeah.
The city I live in now, Richmond, I went to the Richmond Marathon like 8 times growing up. So for a long time before I moved here, my only like perspective of the city was where the course was.
So
I just kind of got into it that way. And I definitely had maybe it's like a middle child thing, but because I was the middle child, I was like, I need to be really independent and I need to do something different. And so like wanting to run long distances, like a half marathon when I was a kid, I wanted to do everything when you were the youngest, you were allowed to do it. So like 12-year-old, you could run a half marathon. So I wanted to do that. But it wasn't until after I like graduated college that I realized that for years and years, I was still thinking of myself and referring to myself as a runner, but I had kind of stopped running. So that was when I decided to run a marathon. And then the whole ultra thing just kind of snowballed out of there. Actually,
it just happened.
I didn't realize this until I've been telling this whole story. I am very candy motivated because when I trained,
at least you know it.
Yes. Well, I didn't. It's all coming together now that I'm saying all of this, because like my when I started training for my first half marathon when I was 12, my parents got me to train for it by at the end of each long run. They would give me ice cream. So like for breakfast, we would go out and I wanted ice cream and bacon. And if you went to a diner, you could get like either a milkshake or like pancakes with bacon. So I wanted to do that. And then I had a vivid memory of being like probably around that age, like 11, 12 or so years old, when my dad ran his first ultra. And if you know, like, a lot of running races, they'll have water stops where you can get like little cups of water.
Yeah.
But when you run ultra marathons, you have aid stations that have all kinds of food and stuff because you're out there for hours and hours. So you got to get a lot of calories in. But when you're running, people are really picky about what they want to eat. Your stomach's all out of whack. So they have a huge selection of things. So they'll have everything from like sausage and bacon to candy to like crackers to pickles. Like they have soda, like all kinds of stuff. So being a little kid, I was watching my dad run that ultra and standing next to the aid station going, I want this. I want to reach in and grab like my hand into the jar of candy when I'm running. That looks so fun.
Oh my gosh.
So I ran my first ultra, and in my mind, I'm thinking like, okay, this is going to be so great. You're going to be able to like eat the fun food when you run. And then as I'm running, I get to the aid stations and I'm like, I don't want this. My stomach is shut down. I don't want any of this. So it wasn't exactly the experience I was expecting, but that is in the back of my mind. It was that memory of being a kid and like seeing that made me want to do it.
Wow. The power of candy.
I know. Strong.
But no, it's like, it's so funny to hear all this because one, I didn't realize that there were aid stations that have sausage and bacon and tootsie rolls and fruit roll-ups and other Oreos, maybe. I don't know.
The last race I ran, I yelled at my mom last weekend. I yelled at my mom and I said, I don't want any of this right now. Go grab my bag and put a bunch of it in there because I'm going to want it tomorrow.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I would have had like a fanny pack or something, just like shoveling like just different
assorted chips. I don't get chips.
Look, I'm just saying, as long you have your priorities in order, though, clearly. I almost can't wrap my head around the marathon thing, but it makes sense. Like, I'd like it, that sense of accomplishment is something that is really relatable, and there has to be like some reason to do this other than like just wanting to run and being a runner. So I guess I relate to that, at least, except it's funny because you mentioned like candy and tied to that sense of accomplishment a little bit. When I was growing up and playing soccer, especially soccer and basketball when I was a kid, but mostly soccer, my dad in particular would like, so at first when I was like really young, it was like, oh, if you score a goal, we could go get like, we'll get ice cream right after. I think eventually like I figured out how to like smooth talk my way into the ice cream anyway. But then it actually became like, if you score a goal, like I will give you like, you'll get $10 on your like allowance or whatever it was. I don't know. So it explains a lot. Like, I do like making money these days more than I like ice cream. But you're just making me think like maybe there's something to those childhood like incentives around sports and running and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it, like if I go on a long run, then I feel like I'm allowed to go out and get brunch. And I'm not saying that like people need to be
like
creating, like earning things or whatever. But for me, it was more of like, my favorite part of running is then getting to lay around and do nothing after you did it, because you have this idea in your head that you've just accomplished something. Even though the thing that you accomplished was what, taking a lot of steps quickly. Like it's, you know, it doesn't really mean anything, but it's one of the few like sort of athletic things that has motivated me. That, and then doing things that are, like I said, that gene of like wanting to be different, wanting to be independent. So when I trained for my first marathon, my mom trained with me and she ran the whole race with me. And so the second race, I wanted to train by myself, run the whole thing, try like see if I could, you know, set those challenges for yourself. And one thing that's cool about running is you can set a challenge of, okay, I want to try to do the same thing, but do it a little faster or go a little farther or climb more mountains. And so I'm never going to be, you know, winning races. I actually did the exact opposite. I came in what they call DFL or dead effing last at the last race I ran, which in itself is kind of an accomplishment. Like I was like, hey, you know, I get a prize.
You know, it's funny because when you mentioned that, I was like, I've never heard of this, but actually I have heard of this. And I have heard people talk about it as an accomplishment. Like the fact that you finish anyway, I think is kind of the point of that, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah.
On the surface, it sounds brutal, but
it is like they had a prize that was a wooden clog. And it's the clog of shame that you get when you, I don't know why, you just have to take home this wooden clog. But
I'll
like,
take the clog. Maybe. Yeah.
No, I have it in a place of honor. Race. Are you kidding me? There were 25% of the people who attempted the race quit and didn't finish. So I was like, hey, I was one of the 75% of people who did finish at least. So,
wait, how long is an ultra marathon?
Anything over 26 miles. So most are around at least 30, but if you run 27, that's technically an ultra marathon. So
how long are the, so you're run like you're running around 30. What's your, do you have like a time for your,
my best marathon? Time for an ultra was the 32 mile race and I ran it in just under 7 hours. So I'm not a very fast ultra runner by any means. There's a lot of walking that gets put in. One of the best things about ultra running is like there are people out there who are really fast, but the majority of people are there to like challenge themselves, push themselves, but like in a way that's sustainable. Yeah. So like you walk up a lot of the big hills, you take breaks, you know, that kind of thing. So you are supposed to always run at like a pace that you can keep up a conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're not like, you know, like panting, running really fast for most of the people, at least in ultras. So it's like I don't know. It's a really fun, cool community. That's a lot more emphasis on like the challenge and the like going out and exploring nature of it all, as opposed to road running, which has a lot higher of an infinite emphasis on like speed and placement and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Look, if I didn't feel so guilty for like holding you back, I would honestly, Mary, get on one knee right now and propose that you become my amazing race partner.
Oh.
We just go for it, because I'm just saying like, but like, I just like you're not frail. So if you could carry me on your back, like 200 something, I mean, you could probably carry 200 something pounds.
Like, I think we could be a good team. Like the best part of amazing race teams are when you have, you know, different abilities and different skills. So I think that would work. I can bring the endurance to the table.
you could bring a lot of things that I'm not bringing to the table. So, but the fact is that you have those skills and I could like give some, great confessionals too. You could do that too. I don't know what I bring to this team. I don't know if it's going to work out, Mary. I'm sorry. The height and the perseverance.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's good.
I want to know though, like, are there like certain lessons that you feel like you've learned through running that like bleed over into your other interests and your other, the other things that you fill your time with? Because I know there's a lot like, software development, games, movies, podcasting, of course, all of that. But like, yeah, what have you learned from that? And why should I become an ultra marathon runner right now?
I mean, I stand by the fact that like if I can run an ultra marathon, anybody can. And I know that that sounds like, Mary, didn't you just talk about how you've been running since you were a kid? Yes. But running is not like riding a bike. Like if you take a few years off, like you start from scratch again. Like it's like the biggest help with things like that is mentally doing it once and then mentally knowing that because you did it once, you can do it again, even if it's difficult. So like I have a lot of friends who have just started running and, you know, we start from, all right, walk a half a mile, walk a quarter of a mile, run 100 yards. Like you just really, really, really slowly build up. And it's really a lot more of a mental activity than it is a physical activity a lot of the time, because you can go as slow or as short a distance as you want. Like, and you can build from that. It's all about getting out there and doing it, finding a way to make it entertaining. Doing it with other people is the main thing that helps. And just being tenacious. But the biggest lesson I've learned from running that I think you can take into other areas of your life is that it doesn't always keep getting harder. Like you can be doing something and feel like it's difficult and then think, well, if it's difficult now, it's just going to keep getting more and more difficult.
Yeah.
But, like sometimes you'll hit that crest where it'll say, oh, all of a sudden it's getting easier, you know? And that can happen over the course of a lifetime. That can happen over the course of a single race. There've been times in my life, like at work, where I'll be working on a, you know, coding problem and it's just, it's impossible. It seems impossible. And all of a sudden it feels like it's getting easier. So I take that with me in most, you know, elements. So that could just be an attitude thing too. You could be having a bad day, bad couple of days. And just knowing like it's not always going to just keep getting worse and worse. There will be a time when things will turn around.
Yeah. That's a powerful lesson. And it also reminds me, I have like, actually just a few weeks ago, I got this like little tattoo, which it's funny to see people's reactions at first. And then I explain to them, they're like, oh, but I got this tattoo on my wrist, right? So I have this one that says courage already on my one wrist, but I got this other one. It's very Denise Stapley of me. But this other one that says lemonade. And both of them are to honor my dad who passed like several years ago. And the lemonade one is just basically short for like take lemons and make lemonade. Mm-hmm. Like I don't really love lemonade. How do you feel about lemonade, by the way, in the it's candy okay. sphere of things? Okay. I'm yeah, not, yeah, fine. I'm not a big lemonade
lemon drops
person.
Are okay. Lemon's fine.
Not the actual lemonade itself. This all tracks. This tracks. But no, I think that there's a lot to be said for just knowing like it doesn't just get worse or like you can make it out on the other end and figure things out. So there's a lot there. But I have to keep going on the athletic physical side of things, because I did mention, I don't know why I'm filled with so much guilt today, Mary. But I would be guilty, you know, being your amazing race partner. But the other thing is, you also famously do live reality games, LRGs. And I think I know you just did one with someone I did one with, Liz Kane, who was in Survivor Philly with me.
Oh, you met new Liz? Oh.
Yeah, I know. I blindsided Liz. Yeah, we were in a line. It was so bad. I still feel horrible. Liz,
well,
shout
Liz
out to
won
you.
The game that I was in.
So. I know.
So Liz
I know.
Did great.
She's crushing it. So, but yeah, I mean, like, I'm curious what that experience is like for you, because it's bringing together some of obviously the physicality of it all with all these other things that we talk about. You and I have both been part of the Survivor Academy patron podcast, and I've like loved listening to you on there. There's the phrase that I can't forget, like really pay attention to the vibe of the tribe. That's the one thing that I think about sometimes from you. But I'm so curious, like how you got into that with LRGs and what that has been like for you in terms of like fusing the physicality with the like incredible talent and charisma and everything else that you bring to the table.
So kind of in the same way that I got my nickname by being there, like having the emotional thing I went through manifest itself in like a physical way. I get like very emotionally drained when I play these like reality type games, whether they be ORGs or LRGs. So I had been introduced to the online reality game world like right around the same time I started podcasting. And it was, it might have even been like a year before I started podcasting. And I had heard about it through RHAP and heard about Sequester. And this was back when Sequester was doing the like online, before they were doing minis, before they were doing their live game, is like the online game. And I really didn't know what I was getting into at all. I thought, oh, this will be fun. It'll be like sort of, you know, playing a game. It'll be like in the same way that people play, you know, Werewolf and Mafia and stuff. So I was like, oh, this will be fun. Immediately, I was introduced to the fact that actually it can be extremely intense and nerve-wracking. And even though you know it's a game and you feel like it's a game, it can feel very personal. And it can like really take over a lot, which is at the point where I started playing that. And I thought, okay, this is too much for me. I'm not having fun with this. I don't like the fact that people online are talking about me. I don't enjoy this. Like this is, they don't know me. I felt like I couldn't express myself well. I felt like I was, you know, being stereotyped. My words were being like misinterpreted. There was all kinds of things about that was very stressful. So I wanted to quit. I wanted to bail. There's your bail, Mary. And my parents and friends convinced me just to like give it one more go. I hadn't been voted out yet. So they were like, just keep trying, you know, show up the next day and just try to have fun with it. Just try to like forget about everything. Think of it like a game. Think of it like you are a character and and that you're not actually yourself, which I had to manifest by I had to dress up like Harry Potter. I had to literally say, it's not me. Whatever people are talking about, this is a character that I am playing. I'm no longer myself. I can't take anything personally because they don't know me. And this is just a character. So I did it that way. And then shortly after that, one of the people that I had met in that game, Francis, had told me, hey, they have these online reality games that are a little more like chill. They're not televised, you know, no one's watching them. But you can sort of play like a whole 39-day game of Survivor with fun challenges and stuff. I wasn't sure about the idea, but she eventually convinced me, due to, I'm also apparently very Harry Potter motivated because one of them was it was a Harry Potter themed season. And she's like, oh, you got to do this one. Like, all right. Okay.
You're learning a lot.
Yeah. And that one was called Can You Survive? And I ended up playing that one and doing really well. And even though it did take a lot out of me and there were a whole lot of other emotional things in my life happening at the same time. And then I played a couple of those online games and I really did have to kind of keep up this idea of like, you're playing a character, like this is fun. You know, you just kind of be the way, you know, that you, you know, play the way you want, just see what happens. But I found some success there and then I had to quit. I had to retire. from doing online games because like I said, they're very time consuming and stressful. And then though that game that I had played, Can You Survive? They started a for charity version that was a live game. Here's me still like, I at this point have heard of like the college versions of Survivor that exist. Heard through, you know, through podcasts of like Bryce and other people who had played other versions of Survivor that were like maybe weekend long things. And I knew that some of them were recorded. Some of them, you know, I had met some friends who had played Survivor UVA. So I knew that those existed, but I had never thought of myself as someone who was comfortable going to play them. Mostly because I didn't think I would do very well. And I thought that it would be, I don't know. I'm pretty introverted. It's kind of hard for me around strangers, like and all that. But I eventually agreed to go play, which I did a month ago in Maine for Can You Survive Season 5, The Great Mountain. And it was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had. It is much in the same way that online games can be very stressful. You have to really be okay with learning things about yourself and how others perceive you that may be uncomfortable. And that was the biggest thing that I took away from it. Like, it wasn't even The second I got voted out, I made it about halfway through. I was the mergatory boot.
It was
sad. But
did Liz vote you out?
No, unfortunately, okay, Liz was one of the people who had won safety into the merge, and then it was all the people left who voted. So unfortunately, like, my three closest allies had all won safety, so I didn't have their votes. So like, they weren't there, and so there's so many little things that I would do differently if I could play it again. But in the moment, I had to just like trust my gut, and I felt like I was doing, you know, the best things for me. But I had never played a live reality game, despite the fact that I had, you know all of these things about Survivor and Big Brother. Like, I felt like I was very in over my head, where a lot of other people, I think the experience of doing it once probably really helps you in the future. So I was like battling this weird thing where, despite the fact that most of the people there didn't know me from anything, like, they, the overlap between Survivor podcasting and live reality games was not as big as I thought it would be. There were a couple people who definitely knew me, but not that many. And so, when I had all these people who didn't know me from anything still come up to me and think that I was, nerdy or someone who might be strategic or a gamer, I was like, whoa, where are they getting this perception? And so I had to really analyze myself and think, you're giving off some kind of vibe, even though you're actively trying not to. And so it was things like that, like things like seeing other people bond or seeing other people be able to play under the radar like I wanted to. And I could not figure out how I wasn't able to do that. And so that was like a big self-discovery that I had to have afterward. I think it's like a really valuable experience from that perspective of learning about yourself. But then more than that, it's just so cool to be able to play out in the woods, build fire, build shelter, you know, be hungry, get to do that. Like, so many of us would love to go on shows like Survivor and probably never will be able to. And I know that there is, some people have an attitude that's like, well, if I'm going to do it, I want to do the real thing, which I respect and understand. But I also feel like if you really do want to try it, it is way more of a experience, even over, you know, 3-4 days, than you probably think that it will be.
Yeah, it's really interesting talking about this, one, because I relate so much to what you're saying. And it's almost like sometimes it can feel really ridiculous to play an LRG and then also be in a world, especially being a podcaster, or especially going to some of these live events for RHAP and otherwise, where there are, like, quote unquote, actual Survivor players. Right. And you're like, but I can relate to that thing because of XYZ that happened. Sure. But it's so interesting because I had, like, in the one LRG I played, Survivor Philly 2, Head vs. Heart with Liz in there, like, I went in and I did so well, but then I didn't win. And I was like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with me? What's going on? And there was all of this like processing, but also learning about who I am, which was cool. And I mean, like, people don't give enough credit to games, but I just love that like LRGs could be this really intense game. Now, you had the experience of like the very intense type of LRG. I had the 14-hour version, the very miniature version, but still, I think it's cool to know that you could like play this game and make friends and build a community and learn about yourself. And, you know, maybe with some people you're like, but do we trust each other as real people outside of the game, which is something that Survivor players go through. And I actually have to ask you, based on that, I referenced Survivor Academy earlier and different advice that you had that I felt like, you know, even I learned from or really loved and appreciated. And I was like, yes, Mary, go Mary. How do you think that type of stuff translated? And I ask this from the perspective of like us being these, like, let's say, humbled podcasters who like learn from the experience, you know, our mini LRG experience firsthand. Like, did that affect how you see the game at all, or like how you would recommend someone goes about playing that? I'm always so fascinated because people always say, like, get off the couch and do it for yourself rather than being a critic. But
it's interesting because I definitely feel like there are way more different types of Survivor fans than just the analytical type who, like us, really like to, you know, think about the game and talk about the game and stuff like that. So you mentioned earlier, like, the vibe of the tribe, right?
Yeah.
Like, one of the tribes that I was on, the tribe that I got swapped to, was full of Survivor fans who were completely comfortable talking about, ooh, what's your favorite challenge? What's your favorite player? What's your favorite strategic moment? And I really, really fit in on that tribe. And I had a really good time easily making connections, easily feeling comfortable talking about strategy without feeling like you were going to come off as a big threat, because everybody was doing it. Whereas the first tribe I was on was full of very, like, sort of social minded Survivor players. Like, they were all fans, but they did just a better job not coming across as these, like, gamer types. Even though I would argue, I find that to be more scary, because you're able to hide that. Like, we're all fans here. We're all smart. We're all, you know, we all think about the game, but you're able to present in such a different way that it was kind of, it was a big no-no to, like, talk about your fandom, to talk about strategy, to talk about those kind of things on that tribe. And I had a really hard time fitting in on that tribe. I would say inwardly, like, outwardly, it might've been okay, but inwardly I felt like, this is not, like, none of these people do I feel like I can, you know, find my ride or die in or whatever. And then the second tribe, it was like, oh my gosh, it's like, I got the pick of the litter. I would love to work with you and you and you. And that was where I met Liz, was on my second tribe. And so it was just really interesting being able to see that. And, like, something that I would, I guess, give advice to people is to not worry too much about trying. This is funny, because I'm going against what I said before. I do think it's key to figure out what the vibe of the tribe is and not go against that. But also don't try to fit yourself into what the other people are giving off if it's so not you. Because I think I had a hard time connecting to people because I was trying so hard to be a version of myself that was inauthentic. Whereas if I had just tried to match their vibe but still have my personality, I think I would have had an easier time connecting. So I think, you know, there's always going to be people who, and you see this a lot on Big Brother, like, want to hide their job, want to hide their this, want to hide their that, want to hide their knowledge of certain things. And I think it's a lot harder to do that than people think. And it's a lot more obvious to other people that you're not who you say you are. Or at the very least that then they just don't know who to connect with. So I think I gave off a lot of nervous energy in some of the groups I was in, because I was trying so hard to downplay certain aspects of my personality that they maybe would have been clashing or threatening or whatever, but it probably would have been better for me to just own it and then dealt with those consequences rather than not being able to make alliances because I couldn't connect with people.
Wow. I love this. I love that we're doing, like, a full on exit interview conversation for you in the game that you played. And, you know, I also love that it translates to life in so many ways. Like, people often say, be yourself. Just do that. Like, and it's often easier said than done because of the pressure we might have in different settings and for a variety of reasons to, like, put on a mask and a facade and do something completely separate from what we might naturally be inclined to do. And so I think I just appreciate that life advice translates from LRGs to everything else. And I mean, maybe to bring in another element of Survivor as we transition out, like, other topics about your life on the back half of this interview. I want to ask, you know, Mary, this might be a very tough question, so I'll put you on the spot, but often Survivor players are asked three words that they would use to describe themselves. And there is so much that we've kind of touched on so far in this conversation, but I want to ask you, what three words would you use to describe yourself? And, you know, how do they relate to your everyday life now. I also love how I like stretched out that question like I am doing now to give you time to think of those words, but I feel like you probably already have them.
I've got two for sure.
Okay.
I'm working on the third one. So okay. I already mentioned tenacious, which I do think comes up. I think I am pretty determined and pretty willing to keep going at something, even if it's difficult. And then I would say that I'm quirky. I have a lot of quirky habits and things that are more unique. And then, man, the last one is the hardest one because when trying to like boil down my personality, and I think this is why I have a hard time like doing things like making Survivor audition videos is because it's hard to like correlate the parts of my personality that are like, oh, I like video games and I like, you know, studying these types of, you know, reality TVs and stuff with like the, I'm going to go, you know, run an ultra marathon kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to say like, okay, are you going to, you know, are you going to present yourself as like the nerd archetype? Are you trying to present yourself as the, you know, whatever archetype? And I'd say that I'm like, I don't know if laid back is a word, but like, I just, sure. I don't get bothered by many things. Mm-hmm. I pull out this anecdote a lot. Like I've had my car towed three times. All of the times it was in the front of like my apartment. Like once was for street cleaning and once was because I had parked temporarily to take some stuff out, in a non-parking spot and then forgot to move my car and I went to bed. Mm-hmm. So it was like all my fault. And I know some people who would just get so upset either at themselves or at the, you know, the city or whatever for towing their car because it's a pain. You've got to go now find a way to get it. You've got to pay a lot of money, et cetera. But all those times it happened, like, I feel like if anything, I just kind of laughed at myself. I was like, really, Mary, again, you did this too? Like, I just think there's too many things in life that are actually important to get upset at the little things. So I just try not to, you know, try to put those aside. Like, obviously there's times when important things happen and you have a right to be upset about them. But I think when it comes down to it, I usually just sort of have an attitude of like, yeah, we'll just like, we'll take it as it comes. It'll be fine. You know, like it's been difficult right now in my like career path, with like the economy, there's not as many jobs in the tech industry. Yeah. And I know a lot of people who are extremely stressed about that, or rightfully so. It's a very stressful thing. Even like the big stuff, like I bought a house last year and I just have to sit there and think, well, all right, well, worst case scenario, I lose my job and I have to sell my house. Like it's like you think about those things, you prepare about it, but you try not to let it eat away at you because I don't want to spend a lot of time worrying about things that are outside of my control. And then the things that I can control, try to control them, you know, so that you can minimize any failure, I guess. So I guess that's what I mean to say, like laid back, is I try not to get bothered by too many things.
Yeah. Fail Mary, not afraid of failure.
Not afraid of failure.
But I do, I think
it's gonna happen, you know? So you have to kind of like be okay with it when it does.
Well, in a way, it will happen. And I think it all depends on how you define failure. Like for me, I think it's not that I don't acknowledge that word, but I'm just like, okay, like things don't always go to plan and sometimes things really suck. And I don't even think of that as a failure because it's like things just keep going. It's almost like, you know, you're running a race and it's one foot in front of the other. And sometimes you might stumble a little bit. Look at me with the running analogy.
It's look at that.
Totally out in my, this is going to be my thing for pod friends going forward, just tons of running analogies. But no, I think it's pretty awesome. And I could relate to that. And it's funny because in the shows that we watch, like often folks are cast because they are really reactionary or they're not going to stay calm under pressure. And so we might see examples of people reacting and blowing up in response to whatever's going on. But just that reminder, like, it's cool. Like, you know, it's like take lemons and make lemonade, that type of thing. Like, you'll be okay. You'll be okay. We'll make it. And I love that. And I love those three words, like the tenacious, quirky, laid back. And I have to, we only have so much time left, but I have to ask you just a few random things that we haven't touched on so far. So number one, there's a song that was made about you that nobody has ever heard, that Craig's, the one and only Craigslist Carl. And for those who don't know who Craigslist Carl is, I'll just say, definitely not sketchy at all. An incredible musician, found on Craigslist, if that's still a thing, and produces beautiful music, including a song about you, apparently, as part of the Robin Akiva Anita podcast, White Elephant. But that wasn't on the podcast. You have heard this song, Mary. Do you feel like Craigslist Carl captured your essence? What is this song? Are you going to perform it for us right now?
Oh my gosh. All right. So the situation with the Craigslist Carl song, this was gifted to me by Hit by a Car Claire. And now I have no memory of this, but I assume it, I have to believe that it happened at some point on some podcast. I'm not sure which one. I sang a song that was how to spell my last name, which is something that we did as children. And it might've been that same White Elephant podcast. I don't know when this happened.
It was on a Renat podcast. I feel like, I don't want to say last, in the last couple of years, I remember hearing this.
Which checks out for me. Like I have a list on my phone that's like funny bits to do on a podcast when you don't know what to say. And probably Sing My Name song was probably one of them. So I get this song from Claire and it's an auto-tuned voice of myself singing that so that it got pulled off the whatever podcast I did it on.
Oh, no.
And then it's Craigslist Carl doing a very cool slow jam about other Polish things to relate to my Polish name. I sent you the link. I don't know if you can hear it on there.
Wait. But oh no. Okay, wait. Should I like add this to the Pod Friends episode or something?
If you can. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, I can. I could do whatever. I can't like okay, wait. I don't think I could play it right now, but I will add it in like right here. Hello, Pod Friends. This is Matt from the future, letting you know that you are in for the hit premiere, the world premiere of Craigslist Carl's Spelling by Mary. And if you want to skip ahead, sure, you could skip past the song in about 2 minutes 30 seconds, but why would you do that? This is iconic. This is the one, the only world premiere of Spelling with Mary.
A-W-I-A-T-K-O-W-S-K-I. That's the way you spell my name without the S.
Spelling with Mary, you can sound it out and it's not so scary. We're spelling quick as key. Polish names are easy if you say them slowly. We're drinking hot coffee with pouch keys, pierogi, some cabbage, beetroot soup, and some manicotti.
Oops, that's not Polish.
A-W-I-A-T K-O-W-S-K-I. That's the way you spell my name. Without the S, that's me.
So I was walking on the beach, Lake Superior, and I was like, you know, Mary needs a slow jam. We need to spell with a slow jam. We're gonna let all those syllables and consonants do their thing.
Slow jam, slow jam.
Going? Wow, it's still going. Well, should we take it to the bridge? Because if we take it to the bridge, what's really wild is the word bridge in Polish is most. So we're gonna have to make the most of this bridge.
Oh yeah.
Well, some people
risky in the names, but let me tell you, they don't even ski. And some other people don't have ski in their names. I think that ought to change. Well,
AWIATKOWSKI. That's the way you spell my name. Wachowski, yes, that's me.
The other thing that I did with this song was, and this is like the committing to the bit part, right? For our kickball team this summer, we all had walk-up songs, and my walk-up song is this Craigslist Carl song, which, like, I assume at this point people have listened to it on the episode, but
they have.
The idea of me walking up to an auto-tuned version of my own voice singing this, like, sort of almost like kids song lullaby sounding, like, of myself spelling my own name. Like, it's very like, I don't know, Old MacDonald Had a Farm, but then it goes into this like slow jam. It's I thought it was hilarious.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
So that's that's what I did. And I got a kick out of it every time.
It is. In case you're wondering, I'm actively listening to it right now as we talk, and it is all over the place, and I love it. Okay, I'm gonna have to pause this right now and finish it, but that is incredible. I want a song about myself, but also now I'm terrified that, like, anything I say could be turned into a song.
Yeah,
so I'm not gonna spell anything on a podcast.
It's a constant fear.
Yeah, there we go. But look, I'm glad Craigslist Carl could honor your memory. I'm glad that this song could be out there in the world. Like, you deserve a theme song. And one that you won't be, like, copyright stricken for, struck for, right? One of those things.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, it is myself, so yeah. Hopefully, I don't think that
Craigslist Carl won't. He's not just shutting it. Maybe this episode won't be deleted because of Craigslist Carl.
No, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure we own the song. I think it's good.
Here we go. I love this. Yeah, I need to maybe have him make a song for me. Maybe like an outro for Pod Friends. Will from America did the theme song for Pod Friends, but Craigslist Carl, I'm just saying, there's your opportunity.
Will from America is great.
Richmonder.
Yes, close personal friend of mine, but he's made so many high quality theme songs. My favorite of which is still the theme song he made for my Twilight podcast. the aforementioned Twilight.
I will say my favorite is his Pod Friends theme song. Actually, yeah, there's a lot. And actually, he is incredible. Like, I'm amazed. Like, I actually, before I had Pod Friends, asked Will to make a song for, like, this Changemaker interview thing I did, because I heard him talking about his music on Renap, and I was like, let me just pay him to do this. And I was so impressed. Will is talented. So
high quality.
There we go. High quality. Full endorsement. 5 stars out of 5, mind you.
100%.
There we go. But Mary, I have to ask with only a couple questions to go. Number one, we talked about Will from America. When I think of Will, it makes me think of the RHAP community. What does this community mean to you? You haven't run away fleeing yet, which, you know, I'm amazed by and I'm thankful for more than anything. But, like, yeah, what is it like for you to be part of this community, just in your own words, since we haven't really talked about that directly yet?
Yeah, I had no idea that Survivor had the following that it does. For the majority of time that I watched Survivor, Survivor was the show that families watch together and everyone else asks, does that still exist? That show still on? I had one friend growing up or one classmate who rode the bus with me to school, and every Friday, because it used to be on a Thursday, we would get on the bus and say, oh, did you watch Survivor last night? And in college, even, like, I tried to get some friends in college to watch Survivor with me. It was very hit or miss, but my family, we always did it. We loved it. And it was around then that I discovered Rob's podcast. I was a huge fan of Rob Cesternino. So discovered that and started listening. And I was shocked, like, to hear people call in, to hear that there was a Patreon and there was a Facebook group, and to hear that there were people near my age who still watched Survivor, who thought about it. I was one of those people who considered myself a super fan, not knowing that there was anything else to be a fan of other than just the episodes. Like, I had never gone on Reddit. I had never gone on, you know, like, any of these websites or anything like that. I just thought, oh, you just watch the show and that's it. And then you're a super fan of it. And so, like, I would go to Sporkle and do quizzes, like Sporkle quizzes. But that was, like, the only way to, like, test my fandom, right? And so then I start listening to this and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much more out there to know and talk about and think about with Survivor. So for me, it really just, like, opened a whole new world of what was out there. Like, I discovered Big Brother through the podcast. I had heard of Big Brother, like, very, very sparingly, but I had heard, probably, you know, on CBS commercials, heard that Big Brother was a thing. I had no idea that it was, like, a competitive game in the same way that Survivor was. I had no idea that there were all these people who were fans of it. So all of the different shows that I probably never would have watched had I not been in this community. All of the people that I get to, you know, play Goose Goose Duck with, like, on Sundays, like, also meeting other podcasters, meeting listeners. Like, I would never have been able to have an outlet of doing a podcast had I not known that this kind of community was out there. So, and, you know, I'm nothing if not narcissistic and love to hear myself talk. So that was really a huge, huge plus.
But you know what? Like, we love to hear you talk. And we were talking a little bit about a little bit before this, especially just thinking of, like, when we first started podcasting, of, like, who wants to hear me?
Yeah.
Or, like, know anything about me other than my takes on these shows. And I think that it's cool to know that people are actually, like, interested. And but also that a lot of this could turn into, like, does turn into friendships and, like, a lot of great moments and memories and moments where, like, now people are listening to this and will come up to each of us and be like, oh my God, I love that conversation you had with Mary, or, like, I loved you on Pod Friends, Mary. But I have to ask, as we wrap up, my final question, I'll say, which I have to always ask, which is, Mary, if your life were a book or documentary, what would the title, see that stretching out thing I do?
Yeah.
What would the title be and why?
So remember I just said I'm incredibly narcissistic. I'm
the incredible narcissist.
Yeah. So no, I, for years and years and years, like, ever since I was, I don't know, in middle school, I always thought that, like, my middle school and high school sort of experience was, like, the kind of thing that would be in a young adult book, or, like, even younger than a young adult. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you've ever heard of, like, the click books or, like, whatever. That was, like, what I read in middle school. Somebody out there, they'll know. But I felt like it was, like, just the perfect amount of, like, drama and friendship and, you know, that, all that kind of things. And I was like, oh, I should write this. I should put this in a book. I should, you know, whatever. So I've thought many years about, like, what the title of that book would be. And I'm not going to say what the title was, because I might still use it, but I will say that a spinoff that I do feel like, along I'll with all the running stuff and other things and the fake it till you make it and all that, I think a funny title would be Tripping and Falling. So, and I think that there's other ways that you can spin that: falling in love, falling literally down a hill, falling, you know, backwards into something. Like, I think there's a lot of things you can do with that. So I think that's what I'd go with. You know, it's ups and downs.
I love it. That's where the episode, that's my
personal title.
I know. I feel like that's where, like, the episode has to end. But Mary, any final words that you just, not final words, like, final words.
Oh my gosh.
Words you want to, like, share with people as we wrap up this episode. Like, you have the final words and things.
Yeah. I mean, like, I reiterate that, like, if there's just things out there that you think are scary or difficult, to just try them anyway. I did not get this bloated fake level of confidence from like from the beginning. You know, that comes with time of doing things. And I like famously, I think now have mentioned many times, like got my gig with RHAP from lying that I watched Big Brother long before I ever knew what Big Brother was, when they were looking for updaters. I was like, yes, I watched that. Meanwhile, I'm Googling like, what are the live feeds?
Like, oh my gosh.
I had no clue what it was. So I think just like go after things that you find scary and want to try. And maybe that's podcasting. Maybe it's a live reality game. Maybe it's running a 5K, you know, just sort of go for it. And like, if you fail, then no big deal. Everybody does.
Hello, pod friends. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode with Mary. And thank you so much, Mary, for this conversation and for waiting for a significant part of the year for this to come out. It was well worth the wait. This conversation just brightened my spirits, and it did in the real time. It was so special to spend that time with you, Mary, but then to be able to share it with others and reflect on it and just to be reminded of like how amazing and nuanced and powerful we could be and that we don't fit into a box. Like, that's what Pod Friends is about. I feel like I say that phrase all the time, but that's what Pod Friends is all about. And again, subscribe to Pod Friends. robiswebsite.com/podfriendsfeed. Make sure that wherever you're listening that you're subscribed. Make sure that you go back through the catalog and listen to past episodes. Look for your favorite podcasters. There's so many who have had conversations with Pod Friends, and whether it was, you know, a week ago, months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, those conversations age so well. And I love to hear feedback from folks who are like, oh my God, I just listened to that. And so let me know on Instagram, on X/Twitter at Matt Scott GW. Reach out at Hey Pod Friends on X, because that's the big place where I'm active around Pod Friends. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you to the RHAP team. And of course, one thing I want to plug is to become a subscriber at patreon.com/RHAP or robhaswebsite.com/Patreon. And, you know, tap in, get tapped into this community, support this community, support these podcasters like me, like Mary, like everyone else. It goes such a long way and means the world, and also means that you might get exclusive access to tickets and other perks that bring us closer together and give us the chance, in person at least, to have a Pod Friends conversation. You're the best. I could go on and on and on, but I'm just so thankful for all of you. And I hope that you take care. I hope you have a wonderful week. Hope you join me next week. And I hope that you know that we all appreciate you for being Pod Friends.